Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. Our show originally aired on Sunday, July 3rd, 2016, on the Premier Networks. This is episode 1302. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/techguy and get $50 off one of their Ring of Security kits, the bundle kit or the pro bundle kit, but this is a limited time offer at ring.com/techguy. And by Atlassian, unleash your team's potential with collaborative software tools like HipChat and Jira that will let you work and communicate better together. Visit Atlassian.com to learn more. And by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet. So I'm channeling Barry White.
Hey, baby. Time to talk computers and the internet.
Home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and all that jazz. Jazzy wazzy. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you'd like to join us, 88. I said that really fast, didn't I? 888. 827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Canada. Outside that area, you can call collect. No. See, I said it too fast again. You can't call collect. Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, will ignore you. We went over this last week. I hope we don't have to go over this again. Thank you. You can call via Skype, though. It won't cost you anything. 8888-ASK-LEO. Website, techilabs.com. Techilabs.com. You know what I did last night? I watched a Broadway play, a Broadway show, She Loves Me, streaming over the internet. What? They actually streamed it Thursday, and I didn't know. But there's this site called Broadway HD, and there's this application for, you can put it on your Apple TV, your Roku. You can watch it on your computer via the web. And it's the first time ever they've streamed a Broadway show to the internet live. And it was really fun. And you know, it made me realize, because I think they probably looked at those last couple of years where they did Sound of Music live, remember? And The Wiz live and Grease live. And they said we could do better than that. Because this is a show with a real show with a real audience on a real stage instead of kind of a fake Hollywood soundstage with no audience. And it's kind of weird to watch Grease and there's not really any applause or laughter or anything, right? And same with the sound. They were some kind of weirdly dead. And it was fun. She Loves Me. It was fun. It was a Broadway revival of a 60s romantic comedy musical. And, you know, very light material. But I hope we see more of that. I think that's wonderful. You know, Broadway resists this. So many businesses resist the impact of the internet on their business. I still kind of am surprised when I'll go to an art museum and they'll say, no pictures, please. Because I guess they want you to buy. It's always because they want you to buy. In the case of Broadway, they want you to buy tickets. In the case of the art museum, they want you to buy the book at the end in the gift shop with the beautiful images that they've taken. But what they forget is the huge promotional value of Instagram and Facebook and of people taking a picture in a museum, and not just of a painting, it could be of any kind of museum, and posting it on Instagram and saying, I saw this. And this is how the modern generation finds out about things. So I think you're kind of missing the boat. Broadway's been resisting that. They're terribly afraid that if people can sit at home and watch a streaming Broadway show on their computer, they won't come and see the show in person. I don't think that's true. Remember, the movie industry was terrified of TV and then later of DVDs and
VHSs. I think it was the Motion Picture Association of America that testified in front of Congress. What did he say? He said the VHS recorder is to the movie industry as the Boston Strangler is to a woman home alone. What? Not only is that a horrible thing to say, Jack Valenti said that, right? Head of the MPAA. Not only is that a horrible thing to say in general, it's really not true, because this was in their attempt to kill the VCR. The movie industry said, oh, no, you know, that's dead. You can't let that happen. They lost. And guess what? It was a huge boon to the movie industry. Huge, multi-billion dollar business. And it didn't hurt ticket sales particularly. And it saved a lot of movies. I just read a wonderful book by Cary Elwes, who played Wesley in The Princess Bride. Remember that movie? It was a wonderful Rob Reiner film in the 80s that Fox, which marketed it in the U.S., couldn't figure out how to market. Was it a comedy? Was it a romance? Was it an adventure? Was it a children's story? They didn't know. And, you know, it was all of the above. So it was confusing. So Fox did a terrible job of marketing. They didn't even open it nationwide. They opened it in two markets, and then they kind of dribbled it out, and it just flopped, basically, in the box office. And that would have been that pre-VHS tapes. But that Christmas, when the VHS tape came out, lots of people bought it. And suddenly, now, and I think Cary in his book really credits this to the internet. Thanks to the internet, the ability to watch streaming movies. You can watch it on Netflix now. The Princess Bride is a cult favorite. And I think it's made its money back by the VHS sales. I know it has. And DVD. So it's not unusual. You know, it's not surprising, except it is, because you'd think that Broadway and these museums would kind of look and see the history of this and say, oh, it's scary, but maybe it's not the end of the world. And guess what? It's going to happen anyway. The reason Broadway HD exists is because some very forward-thinking people at the Broadway musical Hamilton decided, hey, what if we every Wednesday went out and did a performance on the street for the fans waiting in line to get tickets, and it's a long line, and a lot of them will be disappointed. Let's do a performance in the street, hashtag ham for ham, and encourage them to record it on their smartphones and post it onto the internet and on the Instagram, and guess what? Huge success, huge promotional vehicle, and I don't believe it's cut ticket sales. I think they're sold out through next year. In fact, it's probably helped all of Broadway, because a lot of people, I think, probably said, let's get some Hamilton tickets, and then failing that, okay, well, what else is there? So, it's funny how this lesson has to be learned over and over and over again, and maybe in your business, too, whatever that may be. Yeah, I think of the newspaper business and how they struggle, because, of course, The business is different when the internet suddenly happens. And now a bad thing is really happening to the newspaper business. So at first, you could have a New York Times website and hope that people would go there and read the news there, and maybe you could make some money on it. Maybe not as much money as if they subscribed to the print edition, but at least they'd be reading it and seeing the ads. Now, even that's not enough, because people don't go to websites anymore, do they? I mean, if you read the news, where do you get the news? You look at your Facebook stream, and you might click a link on an article you're interested in, or you look at your Twitter stream and might click a link. You go what they call deep link into the New York Times. You'd probably never see the front page. And so that's why you see all those things. And if you might also like, here's an article you thought you might like too, but all around the page saying, please read more. But really, that's not how we do it anymore. We get our news from aggregators like Facebook. It's one of the reasons newspapers are very worried this week, because Facebook announced, what is it with Facebook? A change to the news feed. Oh, what's this month's change? This month's change is more from people you know, your family and friends, and less from news organizations like the Washington Post and the New York Times. Well, duh. Isn't that why people join Facebook? I didn't join Facebook to find out what the news of the day is. I joined Facebook to see what mom's up to. And my high school sweetheart. I wonder what she's up to. Where is she now? Isn't that what the promise of Facebook is? Keeping in touch with friends and family? But they drifted away from that, because at one point, they change their minds very frequently. At one point, Mark Zuckerberg said, no, we don't want to be a social network. We want to be a media network. We want to be a news source. And then people started accusing it of shading the news to favor their own personal political views, and they realized, well, this isn't such a good idea. But pity the poor Washington Post, which went all in on Facebook. Oh, this is going to be our new traffic generator. All of a sudden, Facebook pulls the rug out from under them. What a world. Anyway, I was glad to watch a Broadway stream on TV in the comfort of my own home with popcorn. They had the intermission and everything. It was great. I hope they do more of that. BroadwayHD.com. I'll give them a little plug. All right, let's take some calls. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, sir. Yeah, opera's been streaming to movie theaters as well, but this is different. This is streaming to your home. So the West End can stream to a theater, but that's still selling a ticket, right? Now, my complaint about Linux Mint is that it is a desktop environment posing as a distro. Echo, is the NSA listening? Echo, is the NSA listening? What Easter egg? Echo, is the NSA listening? I don't have the Easter egg, Dr. Mom. I think it was $10 for the stream. I wanted to support it so much, the Broadway HD, that I bought a subscription for a year, even though there's only one play. They have other stuff, but instead of saying, I don't understand, it just shuts down, that's the Easter egg? You're saying that's on purpose? Echo, is the CIA listening?
Sorry, I didn't understand the question I heard.
Echo, is the NSA listening? Oh, I get it. Echo, have you ever received an NSL?
I wasn't able to understand the question I heard.
Echo, have you ever received a national security letter?
I can't find the answer to the question I heard.
Echo, is the NSA listening? Well, we'd like to welcome another listener to the radio show, the NSA. That's interesting. I don't know if I would read a lot into that. Now, here's my constant conundrum. Very few radio stations take both shows. Most stations just take one or the other show. Yesterday, I talked about the Tesla fatality. But I feel like everybody who listens to the podcast and everybody who listens to KFI heard that. So I don't want to kind of do the same thing. But at the same time, most of the radio audience didn't hear it. I guess I could take a different take, a different slant, a different angle. What do you say, Blue Jay?
We could do it again. It was a pretty big story. I am interested in your slant.
Yeah.
Because I say driver error.
No. Well, the driver error was to trust the autonomous vehicle, yes. yes. Echo, is the NSA monitoring?
I'm not quite sure how to help you with that.
Echo, is the NSA monitoring this conversation?
I'm not quite sure how to help you with that.
I feel like she wants to say, I am not at liberty to divulge that information.
She should say, I can neither confirm nor deny, is what she should say. If I were going to do the Easter egg, I would say, I can neither confirm nor deny. But that would attract a lot of attention. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I guess if you're going to play Freebird,
as a, you know, 15-second musical bumper, you can't really start at the beginning because it really takes a while to get going. Thank you, Nathan Staton, musical director. Good to have you back in the game. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to talk tech for the next 3 hours. I hope you'll stay with us and participate, if only to shout at the radio. But if you choose to call, we'd love to hear from you. 888-827-5536. When that phone rings, hang on. Now, sometimes it doesn't ring because, well, frankly, the more people call than the trunk line can handle. But if you get a ring, keep it ringing, and eventually you'll hear these dulcet tones. Heather Hammond will pick up the phone ranger, and say, Heather, you're probably pretty brusque. You go, hey, what do you want?
Oh, yeah, us producers are. Don't take it personally that the manners are slightly different when I grab the phone.
Yeah, you're not the public, you're not the private Heather Hammond, you're the public Heather Hammond.
Tech guy, please hold.
That would be good.
Tech guy, please hold. One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingies.
Oh, wow, we went back in time, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
That was a whole different phone system.
Yeah. I love it, though, because it hasn't changed. So that was Lily Tomlin on Laughing, and she used to play Justine, what was her name, the operator? And Lurleen, Eileen, and she'd say, we're the phone company, we don't care, we don't have to. And it's still true today. 40 years later, we don't care, we don't have to. Still true. Ernestine, thank you. I knew it was an E
there
in
go.
There. Knew there was an E somewhere. So, Heather, you've been answering the phones. And I'd like you to tell the committee what you've learned today from answering the telephone machine.
Oh, I don't learn anything. People call us to learn things from you.
Well, which call should I take?
Yeah, let's do Fred in Upland. He wants to know your thoughts on plume, which I hadn't heard of yet.
Plume?
Speaking of free birds.
La plume de ma tante. Hello, Fred.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm well. Welcome.
I was looking at the plume Wi-Fi. I have a pretty big house. It's 5,300 square feet, and I have the network extenders, Netgear, and a Netgear router. But the signal strength just isn't strong, and between the extenders, it keeps swapping out, and I get really bad bandwidth on the computers.
Yeah, this is such a ubiquitous problem. Everybody has bad Wi-Fi. That three companies, not one, not two, but three companies have started up to address this. And all three of them have kind of the same idea. Plume is one of them. You go to plumewifi.com. There's another called Luma, L-U-M-A. And the only one, to my knowledge, that's out that you can actually use right now is Eero, E-E-R-O. All three of them roughly, I think, are not, you know, it's hard to tell because, of course, companies are a little secretive about how they work, but my sense is all three of them work the same way roughly. So they're in the past, the way we've recommended to enhance your Wi-Fi reception is to get an extender, right? If you get a Linksys router, you can buy a Linksys Wi-Fi extender and put it kind of midway between the main access point and where you want it to go. And that'll help. But it's not perfect. These systems are a little different. They're mesh systems. So the idea, and by the way, there's a this has been around for a while in a kind of more enterprise-focused product called Ubiquiti, which does it really well, but Ubiquiti is very hard to set up and requires some sophistication. I'll throw Ubiquiti into that mix. All of these guys are kind of copying Ubiquiti. Now, the only one I've used is Eero, but I have pre-ordered Plume and Luma. I don't know when you're going to get your Plume. The issue, of course, the first issue you're going to see is that Eero and Luma are fairly expensive. Eero is the most expensive. It's
I'm just looking at that now, $500.
$500 for three. So that you could buy one, which would still be expensive at $200, but one isn't really going to do it for you. You want the three pack on all of these because the idea is you set up the base station. They're all identical. And then you connect in the other two, either via Ethernet or via Wi-Fi. They could be either one, okay? And then you're creating something we call a mesh network. That's different than extending the Wi-Fi. it's kind of an interesting way of doing it, and I think they work better. Now, I had some. I'm on my third Eero. The first one I bought, the first one was sent to me by the company, and didn't work because a previous journalist had used it. And one of the things that Eero does that I think is a little disconcerting, but I understand why they do it, is you have to register it using your phone number or email, and you has to be a real phone number or email. So the ownership of the router is established. And you can't then just use somebody else's. They have to deactivate it before you can use it. So I got one that had been activated by some other journalist, so I sent that back. They sent me another one, which didn't work. Finally, I got a third, which worked amazingly. And I have to say, and I've used a variety of routers. I started with the Airport Extreme plus some Airport Express wireless extenders. That didn't quite do the job. And I use as my test my wife. My poor, long-suffering wife, Lisa, who will let me know in no uncertain terms if the Wi-Fi isn't working in a different part of the house.
Yeah, I have the same wife.
So this is a very good test, a real-world test. So I told her, there's a new network in town. Join the Eero network and just let me know. I didn't give her a lot of info. And she loves it. And we've been getting great results. It's not that it's particularly faster, but it's much more reliable, and I'm getting 5 bars everywhere, even outside the house. So this mesh thing they're doing does work. Luma's a little less expensive. They've started shipping, but not to very many people. In fact, Eero's jumped on that, offering Luma customers a deal, saying, you didn't get yours yet, hey? Well, if you want, it's not too late to get an Eero. Now, this Plume says it'll ship in the fall. It's a lot cheaper, $39 per pod, but you have to get 6 pods.
Yeah, I probably need 8 to 12 from reading what they have on there.
Yeah, and I'm in
$500.
It might, yeah. So it's about the same, isn't it? So, yeah. And I don't, you know, the pods are much smaller. They look like they just plug them in the wall. I'm not really. You know, it's one thing to read the website; it's another thing to actually try it. The good thing about both Luma and Eero and Plume is they all use your smartphone as the kind of controller. And they're all more modern in terms of how they understand Wi-Fi issues. So, you know, in theory, I think this should be better. But I haven't used the Plume, obviously. No one has. So I can't give you a review. No one's even, as far as I know, no one's reviewed the Luma yet either. The Eero is the only one out there. And its review's been quite good. The reason they make you register it to your phone number is they give you constant updates. Not just security updates, and that, by the way, might be worth the extra dollar just there, but also they say adjusting for the kinds of things you're attaching to it. So they notice, oh, he's got a Roku, and they tune it to work better with the various devices. Now, that's, I have to accept their description of that, but if that's the case, that would be really interesting. So far, very good results with the Eero. Well, I'll review the Plume and let you know, but it won't be till this fall. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. No, it's not. So if you use the, the Eero is the only one I have real experience with. And so I'll talk about the Eero. It's my guess. Ubiquiti, by the way, does this as well. This is how Ubiquiti works. The problem with the Ubiquiti routers, they're cheaper. But until recently, you had to run a PC running a Java client to use them. So they didn't do a whole lot. I suspect it's exactly the same or very similar technology. But they're geeks, and so it was intended for a business, an enterprise with an IT department. So it wasn't really. We use Ubiquiti. I think we're using Ubiquiti's here. Russell certainly used them extensively. And I asked him, and he said, now they have a Ubiquiti gateway that's still running that Java client. But it's not going to be as easy to set up or as easy to use. It is less expensive. And there's no question Ubiquiti works. This studio is an incredibly challenging Wi-Fi environment. And we've gone through a lot of different things. We had some HP Enterprise routers. We may still be using those. I'm not sure. For some reason, I thought Russell had put in Ubiquiti, but I may be wrong on that. But you do see Ubiquitis everywhere. We were down at Universal Studios, and I was wandering through the sound stages, and I noted Ubiquiti's all over. So that's a very common place where you have an IT department that can that knows how to manage and maintain them. The Eero is designed to be effectively the same thing, but a normal person can do it. It does port forwarding. It does something really nice, which is IP address reservations, which is a very handy thing, but it doesn't have nearly the variety of features, something like the Asus AC6300, which is my main router. Is it the 60 or 3200? Anyway, the Asus with the spider antennas has much more, you know, 80 pages of configuration. The Eero is really simple, but it does port forwarding, and I have been able to port forward my server with it and do SSH through it. I had to reboot it to get it to work, but eventually got it to work. Eero, by the way, not Euro. we seem to have 5 bars everywhere. I mean, the Wi-Fi is very strong, and I have tried a lot of different. As I said, I did the Airport Express and Airport Extreme. I later moved to this AC3200, the Asus, with TP-Link powerline extenders, and even that didn't work real well. And that unfortunately gives you a bunch of base units, SSIDs. So that was kind of funky. The Eero is very straightforward. And I put one unit next to the router in my office, one unit on the east wing, one unit on the west, or I guess it's the north and south wings of the house. So kind of spread them evenly throughout the midline of the house. And now everywhere has very good coverage. Speed did not improve. Now, Stacy Higginbotham, who also has an Eero, has Ethernet to all 3 Eeros, and they still form a mesh network. That would probably be the best way to do it. But if you have Ethernet everywhere, then it's less of an issue, obviously. I don't have Ethernet everywhere, so I have Ethernet in the base unit in my office, and then it's connected via Wi-Fi to the 2 satellite units, and then apparently they form a mesh. What else can I tell you? It seems pretty good. It's simple software. So if you're a geek, you know you're going to want a Ubiquiti, frankly. But for normal users, I think it might be the right choice. It's just so darn expensive. I'm really glad, actually, that you called and asked about the Plume, because this is clearly everybody's having trouble with their Wi-Fi. I mean, and you might wonder, well, why all of a sudden? Well, I think it's a couple of things. One, we're demanding more of our networks. We're watching Netflix all over the house. We're a lot of bandwidth. We're streaming like crazy. And also, the neighbors have Wi-Fi, and the neighbors' neighbors have Wi-Fi. So we're kind of saturated with radio signals at 2.4 gigahertz. If you can, go to 5 gigahertz. All new Wi-Fi routers will support that, including the Eero, the Plume, and the Luma. And the I should really include Ubiquiti in this. Ubiquiti is designed for networking professionals, frankly. It's less expensive, but it's more tricky to configure. On the other hand, very capable. The Eero, and I suspect this will be true, the Luma and the Plume, are designed for real people and to be easy to use, but probably a little bit less configurable, less for the geek. Pricey, at least the Luma and the Eero are, the Eero the most of the 3. But they work, at least Eero works. And I'm guessing that so will the Luma and the Plume. The Plume is interesting because it's the least expensive of the 3. And I will get all 3 and try them all. I have the Luma is pre-ordered and we're waiting to get that in any day now. And the Plume, I guess they say this fall. It's interesting. I mean, it tells you that this is a market because you've got 3 separate startups, all venture-backed, a lot of investment money going into solving this problem. 8888-ASK, Leo, on we go with the show. Thank you, Fred. Charlie is in Long Beach, California. Hi, Charlie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, thank you for taking my call, Leo.
Thanks for calling.
My issue, I listen to your show all the time. I'm always learning something new, and I love it, by the way, so good job there.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I have a QC surveillance system that I bought from Costco a while back ago, and it does okay. One of my neighbors somebody tried to break in their car the other night, and he asked me, hey, could you pull up the camera? And it was at night, and I pulled it up, and it's like I see a lot of grainy. It's just not the greatest, and I'm trying to upgrade. Somebody told me about, I guess, the IP cameras that connect to your Ethernet.
Right.
I don't know anything about that at all. So if I'm going to switch over to that, what's involved and what kind of a system should I look at?
So QC does sell IP-based systems. The one you have is cabled via coax cable. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's kind of the old school where it would be hooked up via like a TV cable to a recorder or a DVR in your closet there. And you've got all the video. You can look at it on your computer or you can look at it on the DVR. Now, the QCs that they're currently selling have built-in infrared, I assume they're infrared lights. They have invisible lights to light up dark areas. But you're not happy with the results of that.
No, I mean, you at daytime, you can rewind it and you can see pretty good.
Yeah.
But at night, you know, this guy rode by on his bicycle and at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I paused it and I took a snapshot of it.
Yeah.
It's not that great. So I definitely need to upgrade.
Yeah. I mean, and that's an upgrade of the camera, not necessarily the wiring technology. QC does sell IP as well. So IP, you don't have to have coax out to the cable, I mean, to the camera. But you already got the coax there, so coax is still a better way to do it. I'll tell you why. IP cameras, which are using basically Wi-Fi, or you could hook up Ethernet, I guess. If it's using Wi-Fi, it's using up a lot of bandwidth because a good HD signal, if it's a continuous signal as opposed to motion activated, uses up around a megabit all the time of Wi-Fi. And that means if you have more than one camera, a significant portion of your in-house bandwidth is going to go to the cameras, slowing down Netflix and everything else. If you're doing it via Ethernet, same thing applies, but it's a little less intrusive because it's not using your Wi-Fi signal, at least. And you may have more bandwidth on the Ethernet. But since you've already got BNC cable out there, is there some reason you don't want to use that anymore? That doesn't have anything to do with the camera quality.
I just heard it was better. I was reading last night about you can get up to 6 megapixels on an IP system than you can on a normal coaxial.
There's no reason. In fact, the coax has more bandwidth than IP ever will. So there's no reason. I mean, maybe it's possible. I guess they're not making the state-of-the-art cameras for coax anymore. I find that hard to believe. I would go to the QC site. They sell newer cameras. I think you just need newer cameras with better.
You know, we got them about less than a year ago. So you know, it hadn't been that long.
Yeah. Okay. Well. I mean, really, the question isn't transport. The question more is camera. So spend more on the camera, you'll get a better result. Maybe go out. One of the things you could do is get additional infrared lighting. The reason they use infrared is it's invisible to the eye, but of course the camera can see it because it's recording at that spectrum. It makes everything look kind of weird, like night vision, but you can see a lot better. I mean, it's interesting. It's an interesting question because you're saying, well, here it is pitch black in the middle of the night, 4 a.m. I can't see this bicyclist. Well, yeah. Because it's dark. So you make sure you have one that has lighting, you know, that have a little circle of LEDs around it. You don't see them at night, but they're there. Of course, you could get motion-activated lights as well. I really don't think that it's a question of IP versus coax. And the negative on the IP is it's using IP means internet protocol. It's using your internet connectivity to do it, and it's going to suck away some of your bandwidth. So stick with coax. I mean, coax is dedicated. That camera is direct connected to the recorder. I don't see anything could be better than that. That's how a television studio works. If IP cameras were better, I'd be using an IP camera right now. I'm not. I'm using one connected via coax to the switcher. Because that's going to give you the most bandwidth. That's going to be the most reliable. So you already have the wiring in there. That's why people use IP, by the way, because they don't have wiring. So they want to use either Wi-Fi, or if they're going to put in wiring, they'll put in Ethernet. I think what you need is a better camera, not a different connectivity solution. Get a better camera. Get one that has better infrared lighting, or put independent infrared lighting in the areas you want better lit. I would not necessarily say get higher resolution, because remember, when it comes to digital, low light is best with big pixels. It collects more light. So getting a higher resolution, maybe a 720p be better than a 1080p, for instance, because the pixels on the sensor would be bigger. They'd be collecting more light. So it's not that you want a higher resolution camera. You just want a camera that you can see better in low light. They do make infrared floodlights and so forth that you could put around if that's what you want to see. So I guess my answer is it's not that you need an IP camera. You need a better camera with whatever technology you choose. And QC, Q-S-E-E, it's Q-C.com, makes both IP and coax cameras. But you got it wired in. There are other companies. Axis, A-X-I-S, also makes excellent cameras. You're at a higher level than the consumer, you know, the Foscam kind of quality IP cameras. And that would be the thing I'd worry about, is a lot of the IP cameras out there are consumer grade. You got actually a professional security system. Somebody put that in for you, I imagine. That's pretty sophisticated, pretty nice. Much better, in fact, than most of the cheaper IP cameras on the market today. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. Chris Marquardt, photo guy, coming up in about 45 minutes to join us to talk about taking better pictures and to update our assignment. Website is techguylabs.com. If you've got some suggestions for Charlie, put it in there in the comments. I'd love to see them. Here's some exciting news from Ring, my Ring video doorbell. You've heard me talk about this, and I know you know how much I love my Ring video doorbell, and now Ring is getting better and better. They have a Ring of Security bundle and the Pro bundle kit, and we're going to get you $50 off right now. So let's start. I'll just explain. This is the original Ring video doorbell. It's what we have, and it's really awesome. Replaces your existing doorbell, wired or not, because it's got a big battery in it. The kit comes with everything you need to install it. And instead of just a ding-donger, this thing's got an HD video camera. It's got a speaker. It's got a microphone. And now when somebody comes to my door, I can talk to them anywhere in the world from my smartphone or my tablet or my Macintosh. And that is awesome. I mean, that by itself is great. Well, now we've got the new Ring kits, and these are great. You can, of course, still go to ring.com and get the, I don't know, maybe we'll call it the classic now, the Ring video doorbell. But the new Ring bundle includes a Ring video doorbell. It includes a stick-up cam. That is a camera you can just put anywhere. Actually, let me show you. I should show you on the website, okay? Let's find the Ring of Security. This is such a great solution. I'm going to go to Ring. I guess I should go to our site, ring.com/techguy. And you can see the bundles. So you get the video doorbell. You can actually, with the Pro kit, you can get the Pro doorbell. That's the new one. You get the camera that sticks up anywhere. Solar panel to keep it charged so you don't have to have power. And it's Wi-Fi. You also get a chime, which I really love. That plugs into any socket in your house and adds another doorbell, another chime. So it means you'll never miss a doorbell again. And we're going to get you $50 off the kit. With their optional cloud video recording, it's easy to capture and share video with friends, family, or should a bad guy come to your door, law enforcement. And now every time we talk about this, I get more emails and tweets from fans who've actually protected their home because they have a Ring video doorbell. And even there have been arrests using the video. So it works. Crystal clear 1080p HD video on the new Ring Pro. And night vision, and it's hardwired, so you don't have to ever charge it. I mean, this is really awesome. The Ring of Security Bundle Kit or Pro Bundle Kit, $50 off, and you go to ring.com/techguy. Ring.com/techguy. Read the customer stories. I mean, they're just, it's so great. I use it all the time. When the delivery guy comes, I could say, hey, they have a new policy in our neighborhood. Because there have been a lot of packages stolen. UPS won't leave it on the doorstep. But I can, with a Ring, I can say, oh, that's no problem. Just put it around the corner there behind the fence, and they'll do that. And so I don't miss deliveries anymore. I was for a while. They said, no, we can't deliver it because you're not there. Ring. I forgot. I got Ring's the thing. Ring.com/techguy. $50 off the Ring of Security kit. It's a celebration. Only Cool is still around. It's a whole new, I think it's a whole new band. But I saw Cool and his new gang on Friday playing this song. That was fun. That was fun. It's kind of, it's a surreal thing to see a band play a song you've heard a million times on the radio. And then it sounds exactly the same.
Oh.
Well, some of their other songs didn't, like Joanna, another one of their hits. They did kind of a newer arrangement of it. But you don't mess with the classics. You don't mess with Celebration.
Maybe not.
I mean, that's you. If you did that differently, and I hate it when bands do that.
Don't depart too much.
You can't. People want you. I saw. You know, we saw Stevie a month ago, and when he does Superstition, he does the same one you heard on the radio. Where he's got to. And it's such a distinctive leadoff that as soon as he plays one note, the crowd goes crazy. Same thing with Celebration. You know, you hear that, those 70s guitars, love the sound. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, thank you. A tip of the hat to Nathan Staten, our musical director. Picks up on every cue. He's amazing that way. Back to the phones we go. And I'm going to try, you know, the next button wasn't working yesterday with Kim. I'm going to try the next button. So, Gerald, you see that, the hash marks there? Okay. Yeah, see, it does that thing. It makes it a phone thing. See that?
Good Lord.
Is there something you can do about that?
Gosh, on my end? Oh, yeah. It looks like he's on the air
No,
now.
I just, because I pushed the other button.
You had to do, okay.
But the next button's not working. Nobody believes me when I say that. This is true, by the way, in technology in general, right? And this is why I try. When people call me and say, there's a ghost in my computer, I try to believe them.
You're pushing it.
I'm pushing it wrong. You see? Hi, Gerald. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
I believe you, Gerald. Whatever you say, I'm sure that's what happened. What happened?
Oh, all is good.
Oh, good.
You can hear me.
Okay, yes.
You very informative information. I listen to you a lot. And I bought an Epson 2550 instead of a 4550, but still enjoying the 2550.
Great print. You got the EcoTank.
Yes, correct, yeah. And it's wonderful.
Good.
The reason I called is I have a computer. I need drivers for my Navita 8500 GT, and every time I go to try to get drivers, you'd be able to download a driver and update it. Now everybody wants to charge you to do that. Is there any way?
Oh, don't go anywhere that'll charge you. No one should charge you for that. So anybody who's asking for money is a crook.
Josh.
Okay,
that's
seriously.
Why I called you and find right. out how to go about getting
Because you
those
paid
drivers.
You paid for the hardware already. The driver should be free. So Absolutely. The NVIDIA card you have is a graphics processor that speeds up graphics. A lot of times when people buy a computer these days, they don't have a dedicated GPU. That's what we call it. But it is better if you do. Games will be better and so forth. That's an older one, right? So
yes.
Most of the time what happens is there's three different drivers you could use. Usually Windows will pick up any new hardware. And we do something called plug and play. We'll automatically download the right driver from it using Windows Update. So in general, that's the way I recommend you do it. So you run Windows Update, and it may not be, it almost certainly won't be a critical update. It may not even be a recommended update. It might be an optional update. You know, Microsoft categorizes its updates. So look, you won't necessarily get it unless you look and you see in the optional updates, oh, there's an NVIDIA 8500 update.
Well, sometimes when I turn my computer on, the video card, it looks like it's going out. It's, you know, I know when it's working and when it's not, but it goes gray and it goes to a different setting.
Yeah, you're right. You should always first thing to suspect is the drivers. So check. So see if you can get the Microsoft drivers. Now I said there are three sources for drivers. There's also a Windows Hardware Quality Lab, WHQL driver. This is usually an older driver that NVIDIA or whoever the manufacturer of the card paid for to get Microsoft to certify. If you're having trouble with the one that comes down, the WHQL is usually the most bug-free, although, as I said, sometimes older, so it might lack features. I have to correct myself. There's actually four sources when it comes to NVIDIA, because NVIDIA doesn't make its own cards. They make a spec, and then other companies make the card. So a third place to go is the company that made the card. If it's not NVIDIA, it may be ASUS or Acer, or, you know, there are lots of companies that make NVIDIA video cards. So if it's an ASUS card, you'd then go to the ASUS site and try their driver. And they may even have two drivers. They may have an ASUS driver and a WQHQL driver. And then the fourth source for an NVIDIA driver is NVIDIA itself. As I said, they don't make the hardware, but they do make what we call reference drivers. That is software that they then publish so that companies like ASUS can use it as a starting point for their driver. In general, I recommend you use the NVIDIA driver. So the best thing to do is go to NVIDIA.com, NVIDIA.com, and look at the model. Look for the model number. You know, there's a driver's section, exact model number of your card. And you're going to download not a specific driver, but kind of a utility that they offer that includes the driver, but also a user interface and configurations and stuff like that. So it's NVIDIA.com/download. There's a driver, download driver section. You pick the product type, GeForce Quadro, NVS, Tesla, Grid, 3D Vision. You have a GeForce. You pick the series. I think you said 800. 800 or 800M, I don't know. And then you pick the product and you download it. And what you're going to probably get is a larger tool that is kind of a control panel as well as the driver. That's fine. Definitely do that. Uninstall the old driver if you're still having problems, because sometimes that can conflict. So if you have a corrupt driver, which it sounds like you do, go into the device manager and remove the video card driver, and then install the NVIDIA driver. Actually, I think if you install it from the NVIDIA tool, it'll probably remove the old one. If that's still, and then reboot. Somebody in the chat room says, don't forget to reboot. Yes, reboot, because until you reboot, the driver's still in memory, the old one. And then if you're still having problems, then it could be hardware. And Dr. Mom in our chat room is suggesting the best way to figure that out, which is to boot into safe mode. So, you know, you reboot the computer, and depending on its age, you hold the shift key or you tap the F8 key, but you want to get into the boot menu and boot into safe mode with networking. That will boot up Windows in a version of Windows that doesn't use the NVIDIA driver, but a very generic 640 by 480 VGA driver. It'll look terrible, but if everything's working fine, then you know it's a driver issue, because the hardware would still have problems if it were a hardware issue. All right, that's everything you'd ever want to know, and then some, about fixing a video driver. Before you do that, your most important assignment of the day, back it up. We are going to take a break for news at the top of the hour with your friendly local announcer. And then I'll be back with more tech talk at 8888 Ask Leo. Don't forget, techguylabs.com is the website. Great place to go if you've got questions. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about, computers, that's it, and the internet and home theater. Now it's coming to me. Digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, anything with a chip in it. Our digital photographer, our photography guru, he's also a film photographer, Chris Marquardt, will join us in half an hour. But let's get back to the phones. Chad's been very patient in Simi Valley. And he's got a question for us. Hi, Chad. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, how are you?
I am well. How are you?
I am doing well, except for one predicament that I am in. I went out and got a new MacBook Air the other day.
Okay.
And yesterday, I went up to my Samsung Smart TV and grabbed my HDMI cable, and I was going to plug it in my new laptop that I bought. And the genius that I am, I just realized, hey, there's no port for the HDMI cable. So,
what? There's a mini display port, though, right? Isn't there?
I think that there is.
There's a port, but it's just not the port that you're. It's not a full HDMI port.
Right.
You can get an adapter for that if you want.
I can get into that. Okay, well, that's good to know as a backup. Then I was thinking, hey, you know, I can mirror my iPhone to my Samsung Smart TV. Why can't I mirror the MacBook that I just bought? So I just want to see, is there any way to do that?
Well, let me ask how you mirror your iPhone to it, because I would have said no without an Apple TV. See, Apple's AirPlay requires, of course, that you have Apple gear attached to your TV. So how do you do it with your iPhone?
Okay, well, correction. I should say I can mirror YouTube videos.
So you're watching YouTube on your iPhone.
Yes.
And then how do you send it to your Samsung?
Well, when I access the YouTube app on my iPhone, there's a little mirroring feature that pops up, and I look for Samsung, and I click Samsung, and then, lo and behold, I'm watching YouTube videos on my TV.
Do you have a Chromecast?
I don't. I don't even know what that is.
I wonder if the Samsung has Chromecast built into it.
I bought the Samsung Smart TV at Costco about a year and a half ago.
Okay. So Mike B. in the chat room saying Samsung does support. So here's the problem. There are all sorts of ways to do this. Their Windows calls it MirrorCast, and the generic term is DLNA. Apple took DLNA, modified it with a little dial thrown in to make it AirPlay. There's all these protocols, and you would need to have on your TV something that your Apple iPhone supported. To my knowledge, iPhones only support AirPlay, which is, of course, because it's Apple, a proprietary system that requires an Apple TV hooked up to the TV. I think there is one new TV that supports AirPlay built in, but so you have to pay a license fee to Apple for it. Much more common, and certainly all Samsung TVs, support Dial, which is a variant of Chromecast, DLNA, which is a variant of MirrorCast. And I'm wondering if there is somebody saying, oh, yeah, that's because there's a YouTube app on your Samsung. So the YouTube is talking to the YouTube app on the Samsung. And that might make sense. So what's happening, and you can maybe describe this, and maybe this will confirm it. If you open the YouTube app on your iPhone, you pick a video, then you say, there's a button, you say, does it say Samsung? What does that button say?
Yeah,
it just sees other things.
Right. So I'm looking at it right now. So when I click a YouTube video, there's a little icon for the mirroring. And that would make sense if there's an app on the TV that corresponds.
Yeah, I think it's because there's a YouTube app on the TV.
And then when you click the little icon, it tells you the list of devices that are available.
But that only works on YouTube, right? You can't do anything else with your
iPhone. Exactly. That's why I said correction before. It's YouTube. Yeah. I shouldn't say that. Screen mirroring.
Yeah. So, in fact, if you pull up from the bottom on your iPhone, you'll see the control center, and one of the buttons in there is an AirPlay button. But if you press that and see the Samsung, then you're golden. But you won't, because you can't, because it doesn't have
right.
Yeah.
Right, got it. Yeah, it's just the YouTube communication thing going on.
Exactly. So because you're using the same account on your Samsung as you're using on your phone, Google handles this. It says, oh, I see you're logged in on a TV. That's why I can send it to that. So you don't have that capability. If you want to AirPlay your new laptop or your iPhone to your TV, you need to get an Apple TV.
Okay, got it.
Another way to do it that's cheaper, Apple TVs now are expensive, over $200. Another way to do it that's cheaper is get a Chromecast. That's why I asked if you had a Chromecast. That's $35 from Google. And many apps, you're not going to do the AirPlay, because AirPlay lets you kind of mirror what's on the Macintosh on the TV. You can't do that, but you can AirPlay from Chrome, the browser, onto your TV, which for many people is all they want. As long as I can see what's going on in my browser on my TV, that's good enough.
That's all I want to do. I just want to access, you know, what I'm doing on a giant screen.
Yeah. If you said, oh, I want to look at my keynote, I want to put my keynote presentation from my Mac on the TV, Chromecast would not do that. But Chromecast would do it with Chrome, your browser. There's a Chromecast plugin. And many, many apps now, Netflix included, support Chrome. So last night I'm watching Netflix on my laptop. There's a little button. I press that button and I could send that to my TV because I have a Chromecast attached to it. So that's the cheapest way to do this.
Now, Chromecast, is that a physical item that I go out
It is a physical item from Google. It is. It plugs into your an HDMI port on your TV. It has a standard HDMI. You'll be glad to know. And a little bulbous thing comes off of it. It needs power, though. Your Samsung almost certainly has USB ports that are powered, so you can just plug yes. the USB cable from the Chromecast into your TV. That's all you need. It doesn't need a lot of power. And then for $35, you can Chromecast your TV, which means that any iPhone, Android phone, Macintosh, if that application you're using supports Chromecast, which many do, you can Chromecast to the TV. But that's not the same as mirroring your whole computer.
Right, but what that means is what I would have to do is if I go out and buy that device, the Chromecast, and then I download Chrome as a browser for my MacBook,
yep.
then anything I do browsing
in that window, Chrome, that browser window is now visible on the TV.
Got it.
So that's nice. I think, I can't remember, but I you may have to get an extension. I can't remember if you have to get a Chromecast extension in the Chrome browser or if it comes built in. They've gone back and forth. They've done it both ways. But again, it's only going to get a browser window. So like I said, if you have, you're running, if you have the Apple Mac calculator open, it's not going to show up on the screen.
Okay, got it. So, but just in summary, there is a way
yes.
to eliminate the HDMI cable,
yep.
actual cord.
Do it wirelessly, yep. And the nice thing about Chromecast, incidentally, is when you're watching Netflix, for instance, it works somewhat similarly to that YouTube experience, which is it hands off the Netflix to the Chromecast. You can now turn off your phone, and it will continue to play because the Chromecast is now doing the streaming. It's taking it from your Wi-Fi. I should mention all this presumes you have Wi-Fi, which obviously you do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Apparently, now Mike B's, and we'll put a link to this in the show notes because this is news to me. There is a way, if you go to allaboutchromecast.com, to share your desktop screen. I've never seen this worked, but it probably involves an additional extension and so forth. Anyway, possible that you could even share your screen, which would be then the equivalent of AirPlay. We use AirPlay a lot. I mean, we use it here in our conference room. A lot of conference rooms you'll go in, they have an Apple TV, and they have instructions on the screen. And if you have a Mac, but it's an Apple ecosystem, right? Everything Apple requires Apple. But it works wonderfully because then people can come in and do a presentation without hooking up to the TV. So, anyway, there you go. There's the answer to your question. I like the Chromecast. I think this should be, given that it's $35, this should be on your list, even if you have an Apple TV or a Roku, which is a non-Apple way of hooking up the internet to your television, or even a smart TV. A Chromecast is just so handy-dandy. Seems like a lot of uses for it. You could even bring it to a hotel, and if you can get everything on the same Wi-Fi, you could even use it at a hotel, which is cool. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Warren is on the line from Haymarket, Virginia. Hey, Warren.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. Thanks for hanging on.
I am one of those Windows 7 users who have elected not to upgrade to Windows 10 and grow increasingly frustrated by the length of time it now takes to get Windows 7 updates.
Oh, I know. But they fixed that, by the way.
Well, not quite.
Oh.
I happened to pick up on that through Patrick Norton was reporting on that on TechThing. And he referenced an article in InfoWorld on the 22nd of June. And I thought that was pretty interesting. Because the fix that Microsoft officially posted on their June 2016 update roll-up isn't really the whole solution. According to the InfoWorld article, you first have to install a servicing pack update from last year.
Yeah.
Which in itself supposedly caused some problems. And then you've got this roll-up containing several unrelated patches.
Yeah.
I see this as just another attempt by Microsoft to try and frustrate the heck out of Windows users and get us to move to Windows 10.
There is definitely that conspiracy theory going around. Like, why should Microsoft fix this? And the fix is a little weird. You do want to get that convenience roll up, for sure.
Right. What I wanted to ask you: what do you think the chances are of Microsoft actually pushing out a single update that would fix this thing to make it as simple as possible for people?
So I have really mixed feelings about what's going on at Microsoft. I don't believe the conspiracy theories. I don't think they're trying to mess with Windows 7 users. And I think the real strong argument against that is Microsoft's bread and butter is still the enterprise, it's business. And many businesses are on Windows 7. The adoption rate on Windows 10 is better than Windows 8, but still and nowhere near. I think Windows 10 is now about a third of all versions of Windows running. A third. Not even a third. And most of those Windows 7 running are in businesses. And so Microsoft is not going to intentionally bite the hand that feeds them. A lot of those businesses, in fact, have volume licenses and are paying a considerable amount of money. They don't have Windows for free.
Right, so, and you'd think that given those considerations, they'd want to
I'm saying is I don't believe the conspiracy that they're trying to make Windows 7 bad so you'll move to Windows 10. I think they just haven't fixed it.
Right.
And I think they want to fix it. Look how long it took them to respond to complaints about the Windows 10 upgrade dialog box.
Exactly.
And this is where I have mixed feelings about this. They don't seem, on the one hand, to get the problem, like they don't understand it. I don't know why. And then it takes them a long time to figure out how to fix it. So I don't believe that, and I may be wrong. I mean, I just don't believe that Microsoft's trying to push people into Windows 10 by making the Windows 7 experience awful. I don't think they're devoting the resources to Windows 7 that they devote to Windows 10. That's always been the case. As soon as a new version of Windows comes out, the older versions, and this is an older by three versions, gets less attention. So it's a smaller team. And but I'm very sure, given all the complaints by people like Paul Theriot about this, and of course Patrick Norton and everybody, that they're working on this as fast as they can. Why do you resist Windows 10? Just out of curiosity,
Leo. Over the years, I've come to become more and more dissatisfied with Windows, and yeah. I think I've actually decided that once Windows 7 stops being supported, I'll say goodbye to Windows forever, probably go to Chrome OS.
You know, it's an interesting question because where do you go is the next question. And, of course, most people will probably go to Macintosh. Not necessarily a better – you might be jumping from the frying pan into the fire there. And, of course, a lot of the things that you've come to expect from Windows, including a lot of Windows software, won't work on Macintoshes. Chrome OS is a great solution for people who don't need a full-powered computer but just need a good browser. It's much more secure, it's faster, it's reliable, doesn't have any of these problems. And then I think we're seeing an uptake in use of Linux, the free operating system, which is very Windows, or can be very Windows-like, and can even run Windows software with the help of some additional software called Wine. I suspect that a lot of people will end up going to Linux. Now, Linux, unfortunately, is not for the unsophisticated user. It's really for the fairly sophisticated, knowledgeable computer user, because things happen that you need to know what to do about. But it really, if you sound like a smart guy, it really is a great solution. And because Linux isn't one company, but many people, many groups, some companies, some independent groups that are not commercial, there's a lot of active support and work going on in Linux. And as a result, it's something like, the reason I say that, if something like this were happening in a version of Linux, it would be fixed so much more quickly.
Right.
Because people wouldn't have it. They'd rebel. Linux is created and run by Linux users who want the best experience. So I agree with you. I've kind of given up on Windows too. I am looking right now at three Windows machines, one that came with Windows 8, two that came with Windows 10. The Windows 8 machine has been converted to a Linux machine, and these remaining two Windows 10 machines I keep because I need to use Windows 10, but just to talk about it. But I have to say I'm much happier with my Linux machine, even though it's older, than I am with either of those Windows machines, including the one made by Microsoft, the Surface Book, which has kind of endless problems. And this is why I don't believe the conspiracy. If there were any Microsoft product that they would be all gung-ho on keeping working reliably, it would be the Surface Book, right? Their high-priced premium laptop, the first laptop Microsoft's ever made, it took almost a year to get this thing reliable. Microsoft took, and their excuse was, it's a tough computer science problem. So, this does not lend confidence.
Yeah.
It's a shame. We need strong Microsoft. But I think what's happened is Microsoft has realized that they're coming to the end of the line on desktop operating systems. That the future really is in the cloud. The new CEO, he's been there 2 years of Microsoft, Satya Nadella, came from the cloud side. And I think Microsoft's focus going forward is supporting Microsoft customers on every platform, not just Windows. And that's where you're starting to see, I think, a little slip in the quality of Windows. I don't know what the fix is. There is a fix. I mean, if you go to Thurrott's site, he'll talk about those exact hot fixes you talked about. I know Patrick has. That's the best you can do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by Atlassian. If you're a developer, I don't have to tell you about Atlassian. I'm sure you've heard of Jira, which is the way for agile teams to work together, to handle sprints, to do burn downs, to do the whole thing. We use Jira for our two big development projects, our new website and now the new apps. And it just is great. It's great as a user. It's great as a programmer. You always know where you stand. Of course, we tie that in with HipChat. HipChat's the instant messaging from Atlassian. That also integrates in with all sorts of other tools, including Jira. So you have this kind of permanent but real-time record of what's going on. We like HipChat so much, we use it not just for programming projects. The new studio, we have a HipChat room, and we use it all the time. People put designs up there, ideas. We argue. It's great. And then there's Confluence, which we use to document workflow. You can use it to create, share content, organize results, bring team members up to speed. And of course, we love Bitbucket. If you use Git, you'll love Bitbucket. It's the way for programmers to manage code, to test it, to review it in real time. Atlassian, Atlassian.com. It gives your team the tools they need to work better together. We use it like crazy. You will too. Atlassian.com. Hello, Mr. Chris Marquardt.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great.
Good. You have an email. We're doing an assignment review
today.
Is it
time already? Gosh darn it.
It is time already.
I forgot to upload a picture. Oh, gosh. Diggity.
One day we'll make it work.
Oh, no. It's just me. I'm lazy. You know,
I think it's more the busy part of it.
Yeah. I'm going through a down phase in my creative cycle.
Are you?
Yeah. For the last 3 or 4 years. I think this is normal. You know, Robert
we'll,
Bly.
We'll come up with a few exercises for you.
Yeah.
Next week. This week we'll do a review.
Okay. I got that book, the art book and all that, but...
It's not doing its thing for you.
I think it could be age.
I don't think so.
It could be age.
I really don't think so. No. By the way, Lofoten, Norway was amazing.
What was? The fort in Norway?
No, Lofoten. Lofoten.
The conference you went to.
The Northern Norway Midnight Sun thing.
You loved it? Do you want to talk about
beautiful.
That a little bit before we do the...
I have a few pictures up if you want to show a bit at tfttf.com/lp2016. There's a Flickr album.
Oh, you were there during the solstice. So that's the longest day, right? So, these are... God, your pictures, they're so vivid. Is that Lightroom after the fact, or is it just, what are you doing to get the you know what I'm saying? They just pop.
The punch. It's usually contrast. That's
like that. I mean, it doesn't look retouched. It doesn't, you know, I'm not talking HDR, but it grabs you. It just grabs
It has
you.
A film-like look.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
It's punch. It's a contrast. And usually it's contrast, which also then it's kind of
clarity,
drives up the saturation.
Vibrance, just contrast.
No vibrance. No
saturation.
Well, a little bit of saturation maybe, but if you crank the contrasts, you will also get a saturation kind of automatically.
I mean, look at that. Yeah, if I get my pictures look like that, I'd be out of my slump. You're so good. Oh, man. Now that's HDR. No?
It is. Yeah. Just a little bit, though.
Oh, look at that.
If it wasn't so visual, we could do a little bit of a Lightroom thing on this show, but
no,
it's hard.
It's too visual. We'll have to do that sometime when I get a video. Chris Marquardt was in Norway for the last few weeks for Lofoten. What is that?
Well, Lofoten is an, what's the term, an archipelago, how do you pronounce that?
Archipelago.
An archipelago in the north of Norway. We spent, I think, almost 10 days with a group of photographers during the midnight sun. So it was bright all around the clock.
So gorgeous. And
This picture is, for example, taken at 1 a.m. So
it looks like a sunset at 1 in the morning.
Well, the sun kind of tries to set, but then it decides differently.
It's funny, isn't it?
Back up
I was in Scandinavia a few years ago for the same thing.
It's
and it just kind of
beautiful.
It dips below the horizon for a few minutes and then comes back up.
Well, in this case, it didn't even dip. It's just stayed up.
Oh,
so we had a brilliant time up there. It's an amazing landscape. It is just... It's just, you know, you're in the mountains growing straight out of the sea. They have this specialty dried fish. So you see the fish drying on racks.
Klippfisk, I've had that, yeah.
Torfisk, they call it.
Torfisk, okay.
And torfisk. And it's just the weather, the way the clouds hug the mountains, the way it's all green because it rains plenty there. And then the house is on stilts. So they can kind of get along with the sea. It's just a wonderful place to be. It's the people are super laid back. The Norwegians are really amazing people.
Really fun. Well, lovely images. You can I'm sure you got a link at discoverthetopfloor.com if people want to see those, or just follow them on Flickr. You know, Chris is like many photographers posts his work publicly on Flickr, and that's a great place to follow him. His Flickr handle though is a little obscure. Nubui. Nubui. We'll put a link in the show notes. We do have some photos from Flickr today. Our assignment was technology.
Yep, the one that we should have done years ago.
In the
first
episode.
It never occurred to me that technology might be something we could actually put in photography. So here we go. I think almost 50 people participated in this assignment.
Nice.
And I've chosen three to take a quick look at. The first one is by Paddy Jardine, and it is this weird mix. So what we see is a girl taking a photo using her smartphone of an old German sewing machine, a Singer sewing machine, that it's kind of this generational divide there, because she probably never used one of these machines, but she's using modern technology to take a picture of old technology. It kind of spans the generations, and I think that's actually very, very cool. It's also black and white. Black and white black and white reduces things and kind of brings the attention to where the contrasts are, and that is clearly towards the center of the frame where you're seeing that picture of that old sewing machine inside the frame of the smartphone.
You know, I got a deck of photography cards from photographytalk.com. I guess it's a podcast or something. It's called Lightbox. But in the box, it's so great, is a coin that you can flip. And on one side, it says mono. On the other side, it says color. So I think the idea is, can't decide whether your next image should be color or black and white? Flip a coin.
Sometimes taking those decisions out of your hand is a good idea.
This works really well here.
Especially nowadays, we have so many options. It really slows people down because they can't decide what to do.
You know?
So, second picture.
All right.
By Wilson B., titled 155 Retro.
Oh, I love this.
I'm pretty sure it's kind of a museum, an arcade museum, and there's this little boy standing in front of a Pong video game next to an old Pac-Man video game.
The game is older than the boys. That's the fun
definitely.
Thing. Yeah.
Definitely. And it's just this one little moment. The subject in the picture, even though there's lots going on, the subject is so clear. It's the boy because that's the human element and there's no other human element in there to compete with him. And it tells a story. He's looking into the Pong window and is clearly completely absorbed there.
You know, what's interesting about this image, though, that makes it for me is all the yellow in it. And so I don't think this would be as interesting as a black and white photo. Here's an example where color is useful because all the machines and there's a yellow sign. And so there's this kind of predominant yellow. And that's just chance, but I like it. It grabs the eye. It's kind of cool.
It is wonderful.
Yeah.
And last but not least, I don't even know why exactly it caught my eyes, by D. Pizarro, titled Machined.
I have the same thing that he has.
What is it? It's a machined piece of block of metal.
It's called a 3-2-1 block. It is machined. It's 1 inch by 2 inches by 3 inches to a precision of 0.001 inches. It's very accurately machined.
Wow.
And it's also heavy in a weight. And I have the exact same block. They're really great. They're really, they're cool, and you can use them for paperweights or measuring things.
Right. So in this case, the photographer put the focus directly on the front face of it. It's a very shallow depth of field picture, f/2 on a Sony camera. So the focus is really critical here. It has to be right to make this shot work. So everything, or virtually everything in the shot, is out of focus. Only the face of this block is crisp, sharp, in focus, and then you get to see through it, and there's this color balance or this color contrast between the yellowish warm part of the picture and something blue in the background, and that kind of looked interesting. So I've chosen this just because it jumped into my eye and went, oh, I look nice. It's pleasing cool. to look at.
It is, isn't it? And that's one of the things about these.
And that block must be pleasing to hold, right?
Yeah, 1, 2, 3 blocks have no apparent function.
I have to see if I can get one of those here.
Oh, they're on Amazon. They're great.
All right.
They're awesome. Yeah, and these these are coated in a nickel titanium coating or something like
all
that.
All right.
They call it TIN, titanium nickel. And it gives it that warm yellow cast. Well, there you go. Three great images. Thank you for submitting them. Now it's time to move on to our next assignment. And remember, this isn't a competition. This is just an excuse to get you out there taking more pictures. And everybody who took these pictures, you know, used it as an opportunity. In fact, somebody sent me an email saying, I don't take pictures, but I use that word, and then I look at things as I'm walking around with that in mind. By the way, that's a great use of this assignment. You don't have to take the picture. But do, if you take a picture, camera phone is fine. Doesn't have to be a fancy camera. Upload it to Flickr. And send it to our Flickr group. Make sure you use the word, in this case technology, as the tag. And Renee Silverman, our moderator, will put it in our Tech Guy group. And Chris will, in a month, look at the new images. What word or concept should we use today?
Well, we live in fast times, so I thought I'd kind of counterbalance that. The new assignment is slow.
Slow.
Slow. Slow. Take your time.
I like the more abstract ones because, if you said snow, then it's very concrete. But I like technology. I like
It's also
slow.
Difficult in summer.
Yeah. Well, maybe you should do that sometime just to see what people come up with. There'll be a lot of snow cones, I think. Yeah. So slow. That'll be
slow
fun.
Cones.
Slow cones. Take a picture. Remember, we're not telling you really what to take a picture of. Just as you wander with your camera, and try to do this a few times a week, just wander with slow, slow, slow going in your brain. And see what happens. That's kind of the fun thing. I'm going to do it this time. Because I told you, I'm in a little bit of a creative slump. I need a little kick.
I'll remind you in a week.
Okay. Chris Marquardt. Find out more about his work and his podcast and his images at Discover the Top Floor, his workshops too, discoverthetopfloor.com. tech.com. Thank you, Chris. We'll talk next week.
Take care.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Isn't that funny? Clearly, Dee Pizarro listens to our shows because Andy Iannotko. So the story is Andy was watching a video with the Mythbusters. Do you know who the Mythbusters are? Do you have them in Germany?
Totally. Of course.
So
I do.
Adam Savage was doing some sort of video, and he had these blocks, and he was using them to hold down plans or something because they are pretty heavy, as you might imagine.
Oh, that's where I saw them before. Yes.
Oh, you saw it too.
And oh, yeah, Andy, so I saw Adam Savage on his Tested channel. Yes, totally.
So, Andy went, oh, what is that? And he ordered two. You can get them on Amazon. I think it's like $15 for two of them. They make them unplated, but this is, I really like the tin plating. I think that's really cool. And that's the one that Dee Pizarro had.
That's why that thing rang a bell, yeah. And that's why I chose it, because it matched a pattern that I had in my head.
Yeah.
This totally got me, yeah.
Yeah. So get them because they're just...
Oh, I will.
It's just,
I will.
It has no purpose. I mean, I guess if you're a machinist or you know, it has a purpose.
Are there threads in there or
yep,
are they just holes?
It's threaded. And I asked Andy, well, can I use it as like a pencil holder? He said, well, you could, but it's not really... or a paperweight, but it's just, you know what? It's an object that in and of itself has beauty.
Totally, absolutely. 3-to-1 block. Can't find it on German eBay, but I'll keep searching.
Amazon will have it.
Amazon might have it.
That's where I got mine. There's a company. It's called 123block.com. I think that makes it. That's where.
There we go. Got him.
Yeah, yeah. It's 123. And then if you go to practicalmachinistcut.com, they'll give you all the reasons why you would want to have them if you're a machinist.
I don't think I need a reason.
But I'm not a machinist, right.
Beautiful exactly. Object in yeah. And of itself. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, isn't it? This is the BL123 is the one we got on Amazon. And then, as I said, I think the one I got was not this silvery, but was TIN plated, tin plated.
Well,
but they're not expensive.
I'll find...
And they come wrapped in oil, coated in oil.
Of course.
Because you wouldn't want to
Of course, that's
rust.
What you do with machine parts.
Right.
That's exactly what you have to do right. To make them last.
Right. Pretty cool. Huh? All right, Chris.
Awesome.
Great to talk to you
All
as
right,
always.
All right. Talk
Thanks.
To you next week.
All right. See you later. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, thank you very much. 88. I need that. I need a little magical sound that plays. Isn't that what DJs used to do? Like every time they'd say their name, Don Imus used to do it. Every time he'd say the time, he'd go, rack, rack. I need a little something every time I say Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I could have a little sound.
Some kind of little techie sound, like when Windows goes up.
Yeah. I'm sure I have something that might work here. I have, you know, I used to be a DJ. And what is it DJs have? Sound effects, right? Lots of them.
Please don't do the toilet flushing.
I won't do that one,
unless
no.
We're talking about Windows.
Yeah. Man, that's... people are getting irritated about that. Let me see. I think I have... Yeah, how about... I think this might work. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How about that?
I like it.
Yeah. From now on, every time I say Leo Laporte, the tech guy, I need a cart machine.
Yeah.
What do they do nowadays? They don't have those anymore.
It's a.
Do you have a like a sound box, right? Or something?
Yeah, it's all loaded onto.
What do you use, Nathan? Do you have like a Prophet sound box?
There you go.
A button bar. Oh, I need a button bar.
That sounds like it would taste good.
How quickly would that get annoying? Just at a, like, it's already. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Stephen in Salt Coats, Saskatchewan. Wow, Salt Coats. Wow. What is the genesis of that name, the derivation? Salt Coats. Hi, Stephen.
Hello.
Why do they call it Salt Coats?
I have no clue.
You live there!
My entire life. I've never asked.
Yeah. But I guess that's true. You know, I don't know. I live in Petaluma. Where does that word come from? In fact, no one knows. So,
in school, we called it pepper jackets.
That's good. Hey, pepper jackets. What can I do for you?
Well, I just bought a HTC Vive. It's currently shipping to me.
Oh, how exciting! I bet you're thrilled.
I really am. I bought a bunch of VR games in the summer sale for Steam.
Good. Oh, I didn't know that. Is that still going on? I got to run in.
Yes, they still have it going on, I think.
So the Vive is a virtual reality headset. And of the three big ones that are out right now, the HTC Vive is easily the best for several reasons. One, it's got Steam behind it, so that means there's a lot of games out and more coming all the time. Two, it comes with paddles, so you have not only the visor, but your hands can be in the virtual experience. And three, it has cameras, which you position in the two corners of your space, and that means you can move around. The Oculus Rift has a camera, but it really is more of a kind of lean forward, lean back kind of movement. With the Vive, you could take a few steps in any direction, which means so there's some wonderful Vive games that really you can work up a sweat. They're fun, and it's more vivid when you're moving around. So good on you. But now you have a pretty heavy duty PC, I would guess.
Well, I have a pretty good desktop, but I want to take this around, showing it off to other people.
Right.
And I don't want to carry my big PC.
Mm-mm.
I'm looking for a laptop.
Yeah, so the Vive, I can't remember what the specs are. I know the Oculus Rift required a NVIDIA 970 or better. And that's, by the way, not the 970M, the mobile 970, but the desktop 970. So you're going to want a laptop that has desktop-class GPU in it, I would guess.
Okay.
And certainly they're made. The other thing that can happen, and we saw this at Computex, which was the big computer trade show a few months ago in Taiwan. A number of companies basically made backpack PCs. The idea being, you know, with the Oculus Rift and the Vive, you're tethered to the computer. There's a wire coming off of your head. It's a fairly long tether, but you could trip over it. It's still there. The idea that of these backpack PCs is you plug them into them, and now you're fully mobile. And there's no wire for you to trip over. So, but as far as I know, those are not out yet. I would guess if you go to HTC Vive's site, let me just see what they're saying in terms of specs. I would guess it's very similar. The Vive has, I would say, slightly better looking screen. Yeah, they say also GeForce and GTX N70 or Radeon R9 280 equivalent or better, i5 equivalent or greater, 4 gigs of RAM or better. It's a pretty hefty desktop. We had to build one for our ultimate VR gaming machine, and we put in the 980 titanium. But I'll tell you this, at least so far, the games, the minimum specs are adequate, more than adequate. You don't get a lot of times with video gaming, if you don't have the top of the line graphics unit, you have to lower the quality settings. Not the case with these VR games, so far anyway. They're all lowest common denominator. They're all guaranteed to give you the same results no matter what you're using, as long as you're up to the minimum specs. So don't feel obligated to get a 980, a 970 would be fine, just not a 970M.
All right.
Does that make sense?
Should. Do you know anyone that...
Well, there are a lot of gaming laptop manufacturers. That's a good question. That's a good question. I don't know if, you know, there's Alienware. There's so many of them that specialize in this. I would guess because of the advent of these virtual reality helmets that somebody would be doing this. Alienware does have an Oculus. Wait a minute, let's see. Here it is. Alienware. Let's see. They have an Oculus desktop, Oculus Ready PC desktop. I don't see one for a laptop, but I know there are laptops that have desktop class. Aren't there desktop class GPUs in them? Maybe not. You know, these things are not only are these cards big, they generate a lot of heat. That might be challenging on a laptop. You might be better off. I wonder if you'd be better off getting a like a shuttle style case that that would be portable but not laptop portable. How portable do you need it to be?
Honestly, I have a full ATX case. I don't like carrying that around.
No, obviously. Yeah, but if you had like a little shoebox size case, like one of these NTX cases, let's see.
Yeah, that'd be probably
that might be all right, right?
Well, especially with the new 1080 and all that out.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know. I'm going to have to ask the chat room. Does anybody make a laptop that is Vive? By the way, it could be Vive or Oculus ready. It's the same specs for both, interestingly enough. Doghouse Systems, they make great gaming systems. I wonder if they have... we've used some of their Doghouse desktops. Let's see if they have a laptop. Well, I mean, I'm just going to leave it to you to do the work. Alienware, somebody's saying... a guy smiling in the chat room saying Alienware does have Oculus Rift ready laptops. So that's what you're looking for. It doesn't have to be Vive ready. Oculus Rift ready would be enough. And again, the 970 is probably the best thing. Oh, here we go. Thank you, Scooter X, our chat mod, pointing to a Tech Radar article, the 5 best VR laptops, Rift ready laptops. There you go. And one is the Origin Eon 17 SLX. That has a 980 in it. Wow. It's also a 17-inch display because, you know, you might as well make it a big screen if you're going to do that. Alienware makes a shuttle-size case with a GTX 980 in it as well. That would be portable enough. The MSI GT80 Titan, a truly monstrous mobile gaming rig with dual 980 cards in it. All right. Again, you don't need to buy more than the base. Than the minimum specs. Ryan Shroud, who works at PC Perspective and is my consultant on all of this, they, you know, build different machine builds, the ultimate dream machine and the low-cost machine. In his tests with a variety of machines, none of the games looked better on higher-end hardware. As long as you match the minimum spec, the game will look as good as it's going to. Now, that may not be the case next year, but for all the games, the crop of games this year, that's it. You know, you're going to have a lot of fun. Limit your exposure to, you know, half an hour at a time, because you can get virtual reality sickness pretty easily. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. We'll put all this in the show notes, techguylabs.com. That's a website that's free, open, no sign-up required, and every answer to every question is there. techguylabs.com. If these aren't cheap, the MSI Titan is $3,519, and weighs, must weigh 9 pounds. It says roughly the size of a small barge, and battery life is the bits. And the Aorus X7 DT. Oh, this is one you could wear on your back. At least that's what that guy is doing. Yeah, well, you know, I think if you're wearing a VR helmet, the nerd factor, you pretty much have given up, basically. You're not expecting to get dates anytime soon. I'm Leo Laporte. No, that didn't work. I'm Leo Laporte. I got to get the timing right. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What else? What other things
press
could
it,
I use?
Then introduce yourself.
Press it, then introduce myself. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Okay, maybe not that. How about? Let's see. I'm Leo Laporte. The Tech Guy. Does that work for you? No? here's a good one. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Could work.
As long as the folks at A Current Affair don't, that mind. I'm Leo Laporte.
Dan, Dan,
The Tech Guy. See, I told you I have a lot of stings. It's Tech Guy time.
Can't touch this.
Let me think here.
Remember Bewitched and Genie? They had their little sounds too.
I have that.
So when you fix someone's problem, you can be like, ta-da-la-la.
I have that. I mean,
it's tech. It's magic.
Bewitched. Pretty sure I have that Bewitched sting somewhere. The problem is I have so many, and they're not really well categorized. That's probably in TV sounds, you know. It's like, hey, it's time for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Is there a Quisp sound effect? Remember Quisp? The little Quisp character in his spacecraft?
See if anybody recognizes this. It's time for the Tech Guy Show. I'm Leo Laporte. That's the OS2 shutdown sound. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and all that. Jazz 8888, ask Leo the phone number. Mark is in Tarzana. He's our next caller. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I am so well. How are you?
Great. Good. Hey, I've got a little bit of a dilemma. My son needs a new laptop to edit film.
Oh, wow. Okay. Film as in video, not...
As in, well...
Not 35 millimeter...
No,
plastic,
no, no.
Because cellular.
Because of you, we bought a Canon camera.
Ah, because of me, it's all my fault, eh?
You kept on talking about the lenses.
Very good lenses. So now you have a nice camera, and he's shooting video.
Right.
And he wants to edit. So
right.
I just learned about a new program that's absolutely free. That's a very powerful editor. Might be more than you need. Are you Mac or PC?
Well, that's the question.
Okay.
We're looking at either the 15-inch MacBook Pro.
Very nice.
Or the Dell XPS 15.
Both are excellent. Now you just cut down to the choice of do you want a Macintosh OS or do you want Windows? Does your son have a preference?
The question is, he's been editing on Macs for the last 10 years.
Get the MacBook.
But the MacBook only you can only get 16 gigs of RAM, where the Dell you can get 32.
That's fine. 16 is plenty.
Okay, because he runs two different editing softwares.
At the same time?
Yeah, at the same time.
Oh, what programs does he use?
Avid. And then Blackmagic DaVinci.
Oh, that's the one I was going to recommend, DaVinci. That's free, by the way, which is awesome.
It's better than the $1,200 for Avid.
Yeah, no kidding. Actually, really, the newest Final Cut versions are every bit as powerful as Avid. And, you know, Apple slowly improved those over time. They lost a lot of users because Final Cut, you know, they stripped it down to the metal and they started over.
He still has Final Cut Studio.
Right. $200 for Final Cut compared to $1,200 for Avid.
Right.
And iMovie's free, and it's actually pretty good. I think a lot of people can do 90% of what they want to do on iMovie. But if he's using DaVinci, I wonder if he's using more advanced things like color correction and other stuff.
He is, and he's got his new camera is 4K.
Yeah. Oh. Now, that might be an issue. Because 4K video is challenging for anything but the fastest processors. If you're going to edit 4K video, it's going to be hard to do that on a laptop. I think
he wants to take it to the set with him.
Oh wow! So is he a pro?
No, he's just finishing film school.
Good for him. So he's got a job on interning or working as a PA or something on a set?
Right now he's working at Warner Brothers of all places.
So you must be so proud of him.
I am.
That's great. One thing he could do is kind of ask around, ask the editors there. You know, that's probably why he's using Avid. I would bet Avid Composer is what they're using on the set, on the lot, rather.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's just a question of the RAM in the computer. You can't get 32 gigs in a MacBook.
And if he's just doing editing, you know, he's not. You know, we use, for instance, we're still using Windows 8. I have 6 edit stations for our network where we put out 25 shows a week. And we use Adobe Premiere on Windows 8 PCs. But you never see Windows 8 because the editors are living in the editor. And I bet you he'd be in the same situation. In that case, Mac versus PC makes no difference. Those apps are going to be DaVinci and Avid are going to look exactly the same. Of course, you can't get Final Cut on a Windows PC. You can't get iMovie on a Windows PC. But you can get Sony Vegas. There are other choices on Windows that are good that you can't get on a Mac. So, the real issue is 4K. That takes a lot of processor power. And I've got to be honest, Apple has not been very quick to update their laptops. I think they're due this fall. Everybody seems to agree they will announce new MacBooks in a couple of months with newer processors because their processors are getting long in the tooth. They're a couple of years old now.
Okay.
And processor speed is the number one issue for 4K video editing. You're going to have a fast hard drive, an SSD in there, certainly. So that means...
Right. Both of them have 1 terabyte SSD drives.
Yeah. Yeah, SSD is critical. For 4K video editing, really, 5K iMac is kind of what you'd want, but obviously that's not portable at all.
Right.
So he may be, and you should ask them this, he may be not direct editing the 4K. He may be creating an edit list using proxies with a lower resolution video and then applying it to the 4K video, in which case it'll work fine. He'll know what that means.
Yeah, that I don't know. All I know is that his camera, he's got the Canon C300 Mark II.
Oh, man.
And it shoots raw, 4K raw.
Yeah, that's hard to edit. That's a lot of bits. So no Mac laptop's going to be adequate to that, in my opinion. You're not going to get full frame rate on anything.
Okay. One last question.
Yeah.
In my local shopping center, there's a Microsoft store.
Yeah.
And the Microsoft store sells the same XPS 15 for $700 less than the Dell website.
Really?
Really.
And it's identical?
Identical.
Well, that'd be a better place to get it, especially since they'll support it.
Okay. The only difference is that you don't get Dell support.
Yeah, but you get Microsoft support.
Right.
You bring it to the whatever they call their Genius Bar, their Wise Guy Bar. And they support it, which you're there, you can bring it there. I think that's probably superior than phone support with Dell. Absolutely.
Okay.
You know, that's a PC is going to be give you more bang for the buck. You've already noticed that. Apple gets a premium. Apple gets a premium. And their hardware is old. So I would say, get the PC.
Okay.
Given that $700 differential, that's great. And it's going to be very hard on a laptop to edit 4K video natively, but there are ways to do it with lower resolution imagery, which is fine. You get an edit decision list, an EDL, and then you process it later. When he gets more serious, he's going to be working somewhere where they have all the heavy-duty hardware. I'm sure Warner Brothers has some pretty heavy Avid Composer setups that barely look like computers. They're probably Macs, but they barely look like Macs because it's all dedicated hardware. It's hard to do 4K. So Alan Webb in our chat room says he has the Dell XPS 15. It's an i7 4K display. He says it flies, but are you able to edit 4K video is the other matter. Because remember, 4K RAW is not even compressed. I mean, that is, or very slightly compressed, that is a lot of bits per second. That's exciting, though, isn't it? And what a good skill to have. And I can understand as a dad, you're a good papa. You're supporting him on getting the tools he needs so he can go forward in this business. It's a shame that Apple isn't keeping this stuff up more up to date. I think they've kind of abandoned the pro market. So you know what? Get a Windows machine. Sad. It kills me to say that. Right there. Or maybe that's just heartburn. 8888, Ask Leo, the phone number, website, techguylabs.com. What do you think? Am I wrong? Am I right? Call me. Let me know. Chew me out. It's okay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls still to come. Stay right here. Tech Guy Podcast brought to you this fine 3rd of July by our friends at Epson, makers of the EcoTank, fabulous EcoTank printer. You know, the real challenge, I've been trying to help my mom. She needs a new Epson printer. Actually, she has an Epson printer, but she needs a new one. It's time. It's been a few years. And the challenge is, well, I know I'm going to get her an EcoTank. You know, it's funny. My mom said, well, the problem is every time I run out of ink, I have to wait till my grandson, Grady, comes over. Because Grady knows how to put in the ink. So it's really not a question for me. I know what I'm getting her, an EcoTank printer. The question is, which EcoTank? They're a broad range. So some of the EcoTank printers use that fabulous Precision Core technology. I'm a big fan of that. That's the one we got, the ET4550. Precision Core is the highest quality dot. I think it's 40 million dots a second inkjet printer. Comes from their industrial line of printers, and it's amazing. You get vivid colors, you get laser quality black text, you get auto two-sided printing, 30-page auto document feeder. Actually, mom will use that. She scans documents in and newspaper articles and things, magazines. It prints wirelessly too. She's a big iPad user. Easy wireless printing from tablets. She also has an iPhone, no problem there. She said, I want wireless because I don't like to have to go over to the printer. I just want to print from the house, anywhere in the house. And I said, Mom, I got you covered with the Epson EcoTank ET4550 wireless all-in-one printer. It doesn't use ink cartridges. Grady, sorry, you don't have to come over and do this anymore. Instead, it's got an innovative refillable ink tank. And by the way, this is why it won the CES 2016 Innovations Award honor. Because, here's a printing company saying you don't need to run out and get more cartridges. You can print for up to 2 years with the ink that comes with the printer. In the case of the 4550, 11,000 black pages, 8,500 color pages. Grady will be in college before you need to put more ink in this, Mom. Now, Mom doesn't need this, but if you're in a business, the high-volume WFR 4640 comes with an EcoTank as well, and you refill it with pouches, not the bottles, and that prints 20,000 pages, color or black and white, in between reloads. Now, the nice thing is, when it does come time to buy new ink, the ink is 80% less expensive. 80% less. You're going to save big time with your EcoTank. The Epson EcoTank system was named the 2016 Small Biz Windows Printer of the Year. But we've got it in the house, too, because I love it. And Mom's going to like the Creative Print app. She's been putting a lot of stuff on Instagram lately. Mom, you can print your Instagram and Facebook photos right from the site to your printer. You can download the app and create personalized photo collages, custom greeting cards, stationery, coloring book templates. You can even print photos right onto CDs or DVDs. And, of course, be creative on the go with the Epson Creative Print app. You can print from your mobile device to a variety of compatible Epson all-in-one printers right on the network. That's what Mom wants. Not just for moms, for everybody, home and office, there's nothing better. The EcoTank SuperTank printers will transform the way your home, your office, your work group, your mom prints. For the best combination of ease and value, turn to the new Epson EcoTank printers. That's EPSON.com/EcoTank. And we thank Epson so much. They have been huge supporters of TWIT and the Tech Guy Podcast, and we really appreciate that. Epson.com/EcoTank. Oh, you're right. Dad should get one too, shouldn't he? Moms, dads, everyone, kids, boys and girls, children of all ages. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones. Walt in San Diego. Hello, Walt.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I am doing fantastic also.
Great.
Sitting on my boat down in the harbor in San Diego.
Oh, you're making me jealous now.
Yeah.
But
I got a lot of work to do on it.
Yeah. Yeah. I want a boat so bad, but then everybody tells me, no, it's just a money pit.
It is.
But
BOAT stands for Break Out Another Thousand.
But you get to sit on your boat on a Sunday afternoon and enjoy the beautiful weather and the water lapping at your stern.
Yep, yep.
The bilge pump cranking around. Yeah, that's great.
Hopefully it doesn't have to.
What can I do for you today?
Okay, I'm a ham operator and I'm going to be sailing.
Hmm.
What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to look for a Windows-based touchscreen tablet large enough to handle the Navionics software as well as possibly Ham Radio Deluxe.
What fun.
So therefore, it's got to be a tablet with the GPS in it, but I am not an Apple fan.
Ah, so the Nav software needs a GPS.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was going to just say, hey, those new Microsoft Surfaces are fabulous. I don't know if they have, typically a tablet, if it has 4G cell reception, an LTE radio, it will have a GPS in it or not. Let me see, though, if the Surface does, because the Surface is the top of the line when it comes to these. Yes, it does. If you get the LTE version,
mm-hmm.
And you would probably want that because that'll give you connectivity as long as you're near enough the coastline and you can still get cell service, it'll give you connectivity at sea as well. And it also supports GPS.
And so, that is also a touchscreen?
It's the best touchscreen made.
Awesome.
Yeah, I love the Surface Pro 4. I mean, there are many companies that make touchscreen Windows machines, and probably anything with an LTE radio is going to support GPS as well. That seems to be – that commonly goes together. If you think it's going to be getting salt air, you might want to get something a little hardened like a Panasonic Toughbook. Is it going to get – it's not going to get wet, though. You're going to keep it inside.
No, if it gets wet, I have other problems.
I'm trying to get a sense of that's really what you're going to look for, I think, is LTE radio, and then and if it has the LTE radio, I would check for GPS, but it's my sense that most of these will. You can get external hardware, obviously, a USB GPS receiver.
That's true, but then, external hardware, somehow or other, you unplug it, and then you lay it down someplace, and you can't find it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of little places where things can get lost on a sailboat.
Yeah, I bet there is. It may be that the Surface Pro 4 does not have GPS, but the Surface Pro 3 does. So, okay. I'm looking here. I'm going to have to check around. Maybe somebody in the chat room can help me do some research on that one. But there certainly are laptops with GPS, and you'll get LTE along with that. If the Surface is available with that, that's the one to get. I really like that one. Asus makes some really nice ones as well, ASUS, touchscreen and everything. A lot of the Windows 10 laptops now have touchscreen because Windows 10 is designed for touch. What's your call sign?
N6STM.
N6STN, W6TWT. Will we be seeing you, I guess, field day's over. Did you go out in the boat on field day?
I was visiting my daughter on the East Coast.
Oh, okay.
I had to touch with somebody there.
Do you get good HF reception out in the water? I would guess you would.
Yes, you do.
Yeah. Do you have a tower on your boat, a little mast?
I have an insulated backstay.
Nice.
So
very nice.
I'm using that for HF, and I'm going to be running about a 4.5-foot fiberglass reinforced antenna on the top of my mast to handle my VHF, UHF.
You know, it's a very natural thing. You already have a maritime radio anyway. You have to. And what fun to do ham. And there's no interference from neon lights and bad transformers and all the stuff that cities just really ruin ham radio reception.
Yeah, that's for sure.
That's great. Well, have a safe sail and enjoy your new setup. Sounds great.
Okay, thank you much.
Take care. Yeah, I think, you know, I'm trying to, it's difficult for me to do the Google search while I'm talking, but it looks like there are some surfaces that have GPS. The Surface 3 tablet has GPS if you get the LTE model. Somebody said in the chat room the 4 does not. You add the $100 LTE modem, you get a GPS and GLONASS support. So that's good. That's good. Moving on to Joe in Oceanside, California. Hi, Joe. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Great. First-time caller. Love your show.
By the way, I think if you hurry, you can get the Surface Pro 3 for a discount, because I think they're discontinuing it. At least I think they're stop making it. So what can I do for you, Joe?
A couple Windows 10 questions.
Yes. Love those Windows 10 questions. Can you tell? What's up?
Haven't done it yet. I'm still on Windows 7, but I've read a couple of things, and I just wanted to get your take on them. I'm using Google Chrome as my default browser, and I understand that Microsoft doesn't let you do that on Windows 10.
Yes, they do. No problem. That's what I do as well.
So there's nothing special. You have to go into settings and
yep, it's the same as it's always been with Windows. You can have any default browser you want. They have a new browser called Edge. Windows 10 comes with both Edge and Internet Explorer. And as they've updated Windows 10, in fact, the big Windows 10 anniversary update, which comes out August 2nd, will add a lot of features to Edge, including plugin support that should make it pretty usable. It's the prettiest browser on Windows 10, but Chrome works fine, and I'm dependent on Chrome plugins and Chrome syncing, so I use Chrome all the time on Windows 10.
Because I read something that Windows just came out recently with a note that they don't let Cortana do anything.
Oh,
in Chrome,
but right.
You still have Chrome as your
yeah.
Browser.
Yeah, okay. But Cortana's different. Yeah, Cortana's their voice recognition, and I wouldn't be surprised.
Right. I would probably keep that turned off anyway.
Yeah.
So, and then the other thing is they said that you have to uninstall Microsoft Essentials before you upgrade because people are having problems with Windows 10 not recognizing both Defender and Essentials. But even though they are the same thing, they're having problems with the
That I have not seen, but if people are reporting problems, it may be a problem. In general, I always like to do a clean install. The Windows 10 upgrade, by the way, you only have another month to do that, does upgrade in place on top of. My suggestion is you do that, you activate Windows 10, that ensures the license, and then do a clean install anyway. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sorry, I had to cut that off because we ran out of time, but...
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
You can. You know, most people don't have problems with the upgrade in place on top of it. But so I would try it and see. If you do, though, once you've activated Windows 10, that machine owns it. So then you can go out and download the ISO and do a pure clean install. And generally, that's the best way to do it anyway.
Okay, I guess.
I would just try it. And I haven't had any problems. I upgraded a number of machines. But you do want to hurry because you only have a month left.
Yeah, I know. I only have 150 gigabyte hard drive, so, and I have Windows 7 on there that is using about 100 of that. So will it?
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Will it upgrade over that without upgrading in the files?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Like I say, I can't give you 100% guarantee, but it's they've got the upgrade process down pretty well. It works very, very well, and you know the problem is if you got 350 million people installing it, which they have. Even if 1/10 of 1/100th of 1/1000th of 1% have a problem, that's a lot of people.
Right.
So anytime you got something in this kind of mass quantities going on, there's always going to be, you can go to any forum and find people who say, oh, gosh, this failed and this failed and this failed. But I haven't had any problems.
Okay. I did back up my 7 with Macrium.
Exactly. Do a Macrium image. Absolutely. You know, that's something Microsoft doesn't tell you to do, and I wish they did. Because, of course, if you've had any experience with upgrading operating systems, you know, the first thing you do is image the existing operating system.
Right. Okay. So,
in fact, that's a way, by the way, to get Windows 10 and then go back to Windows 7, but have that license. That's permanent now. So if you then at any time in a year or whatever want Windows 10, you've already licensed it.
Okay. So I can actually back up to Windows 10 too?
Yeah. Well, you don't have to, though. But yes.
I mean, so,
yeah, you could image, you could use Macrim, image both, then you get your choice. Once you activate Windows 10, the point is you never need to have to activate it again. That machine has an entitlement to Windows 10.
Great. Okay.
Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. My pleasure. I think you'll like it. You know, as much of a hard time as I've given Microsoft about forcing people to upgrade, because I don't think that's right. I don't think people should have to. I still recommend Windows 10. Far and away. I mean, if you're good, you know, unless you have another, if you have other reasons to stick with Windows 7, go ahead. But Windows 10 is by far the best version of Windows to use right now for so many reasons. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. I think I might be giving a false impression, so I want to be very clear. I like Windows 10. I use Windows 10. I don't have any installations of Windows 7 or 8 around anymore. I think Windows 10 is a great operating system. So while I don't agree with Microsoft's kind of forced march to Windows 10, I think that's wrong of them to really foist it on people. You should get to use whatever operating system version you want. If you don't have a strong reason not to go to Windows 10, go to Windows 10. I think you will like it. Microsoft will support it longer than any current version of Windows because it's the newest. It's pretty clear that Microsoft's strategy now is not to release a new version every couple of years. We're not going to see Windows 11, 12, 13, 14. This is kind of Windows. It's done. And you will get upgrades. We're getting one August 2nd. And Microsoft says they're going to do two or three like this, big updates a year. And as far as I know, they're going to continue to be free once you have upgraded to Windows 10. So if you're buying a new machine, buy it with Windows 10. If you have the option to upgrade your Windows 7 or 8.1 to Windows 10 and you've been putting it off, you've got one more month to decide, I would do it. The key, though, is to back up your existing install. Make an image or a backup of your existing install so you can easily go back. In theory, if you upgrade, if you accept Microsoft's offer of a free copy of Windows 10 and you upgrade, in theory, you will have 30 days to roll that back. You could say, oh, you know, I don't like this Windows 10. I want to go back. And there's a button you press and it goes back. In theory, doesn't always work. In fact, I've had it fail on me. But that wasn't a concern because guess what? I made a copy of my previous Windows install. So I would do that for sure. You should always, anytime you're doing an operating system upgrade of that magnitude, you should always have a backup of your original. You don't want to be out of work for a few years or days or weeks or months. But having said that, Windows 10 is great. It's got, you know, it looks very much like Windows 7. The start menu is back. You can do it fully in desktop mode. They have a lot of nice new features. This new anniversary update they're going to do August 2nd is going to add even more. And I expect Microsoft to continue to do that. They're going to make it more and more secure. It's very secure now, I believe. So there's, you know, I don't want you to get the impression I'm saying, oh, stay away from Windows 10. I'm not saying that. I'm saying you have the right to, and Microsoft's wrong to force people to or automatically upgrade them to. But all things, you know, if being equal, it's definitely the most recent operating system. And once you're on the Windows 10 train, I think that's it. I don't think you'll be asked to buy another copy of Windows, not for the next few years, maybe ever. This is Microsoft no longer sees itself as, you know, making all of its money on Windows. It makes its money on services that it operates, like OneDrive and Office 365 and, you know, these annual subscriptions. And of course, and if you're in a business, you are subscribing to Windows. That's where Microsoft makes its money, in Azure, the cloud, things like that. They're not trying to make money. I don't believe they're trying to make money on the operating systems anymore. They just want to get you up to date so that then they can make money when you buy apps in the store and stuff like that. So I'm not unhappy. I think Windows 10 is pretty good. Very good. Very usable. Very reliable. I'm holding in my hand right now the HP Spectre 13T. This is their kind of super slim, light, executive style. No touch, but it works just fine. It is, I would say, as good or better than Windows 7. There's features in Windows 10 I love. The Windows Hello, for instance. The camera will see me and log me in. You can use a fingerprint reader to do that. That's fabulous. I do believe it's more secure. It comes now with a built-in antivirus and anti-spyware. They've done a good job. So don't let me scare you away from Windows 10. I'm just defending everybody's right to say no. You should have that right. And by the way, I am not recommending I like Microsoft's Surface tablets, but I am not recommending Microsoft's Surface Book notebook. It is overpriced and buggy. And I'm sad that I bought this. I'm sad. I thought, oh, it's cool with that cool hinge and it's detachable. No. Dell makes excellent Windows 10 notebooks. Do get a touch screen. I think that's a good idea. This HP is notable because it's very thin and light, but it doesn't have a touch screen. It doesn't have the Windows Hello camera. So maybe it's not the best choice. The good news about Windows machines is there's a huge ecosystem and lots of choice. Brenda, listening to WFPA. Hi, Brenda. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you, Brenda.
Good to talk to you.
Yeah, you're in Fort Payne?
Fort Payne, Alabama.
Wonderful. So nice to have you and all the folks listening in Fort Payne.
Thank you.
What can I do for you?
I need to upgrade from Windows 8 to 8.1.
Yes, you do.
Upgrade to Internet Explorer 11.
Yeah. And before you can upgrade to Windows 10.
Right.
Yeah. So definitely you want to do that.
But the 8.1 installation wants Sentinel runtime drivers uninstalled, which I don't have, but Microsoft Answers website says install the drivers and remove them.
You can't remove them until you install them.
Right. So I'm supposed to go to the Sentinel website and install them and then remove them. And is that all for real?
Did you ever use a program called Lightworks?
No.
Why do you have the Sentinel drivers? Why does it think you have the Sentinel drivers? Wow. Well, that's weird. So there is, I believe... Wow, that is just weird. Sentinel comes from a company called Gemalto. You never installed them?
No.
That sounds like you.
It was one of the preloaded.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, that's why. So you did have it because it's one of those stupid trialware antiviruses. And it's blocking the install. See, this is why I don't like, and by the way, don't. Once you get to Windows 10, you don't need an antivirus because security software just gets in the way, and that's what Microsoft says, well, you got to uninstall it. So I understand now. You have the remains of the trialware on there, so you need to install it again, uninstall it, and then go to Windows 8.1. That is real. That was something you got from your manufacturer. I'm sorry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ugh. Ugh. I'm wondering if Gemalto has uninstall. You know, it would be nice if you could just uninstall it. So do you understand that, Brenda? They I guess this came with your computer. Who made the computer, just out of curiosity?
I believe it was Home Shopping Network. It's an HP computer.
Yeah. So either HP did or Home Shopping Network did, and probably that was in the big checklist of all the great things you get with this computer with only three low payments of $99.99.
but when I search for them, I don't find them.
Yeah, it's at Gemalto, Gemalto.com. That's the antivirus they installed on there. But if you, they have. In fact, I just had the page here. Let me look. It's under SentinelCustomer.SafeNet-Inc. There's a customer community, and they have an installer. You might even be able to, a lot of times when you run the installer, it has an option to uninstall instead of install.
Okay.
So this is crapware.
Yeah.
HP installs a lot of crapware on their machines. So does the Home Shopping Network. I'm not sure which one did it. You know, the best, I wonder if there's a way to, what you'd really like is a clean install of Windows 8.1. I'll tell you what, we'll put a link at techguylabs.com to the direct download for this Sentinel. You can install
it. Okay, thank you, Leo.
You're welcome. Uninstall it. You want to get it off there anyway, and you want to get the purest install of Windows 8.1 you can, and then go to Windows 10. And once you get to Windows 10, my suggestion would be, the next step would be to do a clean install of Windows 10. It's Hewlett Packard that's installing it. All right. Okay. Wait a minute. It's not just Gemalto. I get it. So it came with your Gemalto. That's why I was asking about Lightworks. Apparently, it's licensing software. Okay. So Scooter X in our chat room says, and he's very reliable, he says that this was a... here, I have it here. He says, Sentinel is a licensing software that can be embedded in other programs. That's why I was seeing Lightworks as well as Gemalto. So superuser.com had an article about it. If you installed Lightworks, you could have it. You also got it from you could have it from Gemalto. So safenet-inc.com/sentinel-downloads. You install the GUI drivers. That's the thing that you want to get rid of. You install that, then uninstall them and restart. And the Windows 10 install is continuing. Is that a quote, Scooter, or is that you? Yeah. Oh, that's from answers.microsoft.com. So we're going to put all of that in the show notes. I get it now. It's licensing software. So there's a variety of programs it could have come with. It's always best if they offer an uninstall to use the uninstall. So this site is correct. I think we should put all of this content into the show notes. Crazy. Crazy, crazy. Yeah, but Guy, if she downloads the Windows ISO, can she just upgrade that way? I think she's going to get the same error. Excellent choice for our Independence Day weekend, Woody Guthrie. This land was made for you and me. So I did a little more digging, and thanks to our chat room and Scooter X and others in the chat room. These Sentinel drivers, it turns out, are used by a variety of programs. It's a license... it's a licensing program that other companies like Lightworks will buy and install with their software so that they can prevent piracy. And you may uninstall the software, but the licensing stuff sticks around. Windows doesn't like it. We are going to, for Brenda and all of you who experience this, we're going to put in the show notes a Microsoft support thread, some links. The easiest way to get rid of it is to install the GUI drivers. They call it the GUI Runtime Installer. We'll put a link to that. And then uninstall it. That is kooky, I know. It's sad. It's sad. Sue in Marcos, California. Hi, Sue. Or San Marcos.
Hi.
Leo Laporte.
San Marcos.
Yes,
hi, Leo. Marcos. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for calling.
I have a third-generation iPad, which has thousands of photos on it. I have now backed them up to the iCloud photo library.
Yay!
We'll see.
Uh-oh, why?
I've tried to delete them from my iPad, get a message saying this photo will be deleted from iCloud photo library on all of your devices.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
How do I make some more room on my iPad?
Okay, so the first step was doing exactly what you do. Just make sure that those photos are there. Log into your iCloud account on the browser, on a computer, and you should see all your photos there. That means they've been now backed up there. Those photos on iCloud are the originals.
Okay.
They made copies of the originals. What is supposed to then happen, and maybe you didn't check this box, right underneath the iCloud Photo Library box, there is a box to say, let iCloud Photo Library manage my photos. Because what will happen then is it'll make room on your... This is Apple's solution to the problem so many people have, which is, what do? I filled up my iPhone. I don't have any room for pictures. And I know people will go out and buy new iPhones because of that. So Apple's kind of thinking, well, okay, so we're going to make a solution for people who just don't understand any other way. Your problem is you're too smart. You think you need to delete them. You don't. And you're right. I'm glad you stopped because it would have deleted it everywhere.
Right.
What you want to do is turn on Let iCloud Photo Library Manage My Photos. And then what it does is it makes room on your iPad by putting smaller thumbnail versions of the most recent images. It may even clear out some of the older images. Ideally, you'd have all the same images in your iPad, but lots more space.
Well, it says, I don't really have a place to checkmark that. It says, if I go to Manage Storage, it says to free up storage, manage your Photo Library Photos app.
Yeah, no, you don't want to do that. You want to, let me go here. I'm looking at my own iPad, which will help me understand this. So you're in Photos and Camera. And you turn on iCloud Photo Library in Photos and Camera.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Okay,
and
so
then,
I tell it.
And then when you turn that on, you know, that's now they're going to start the backup. And then you're going to see below it. You don't see it until you turn that on.
Okay.
Optimize iPad storage or download and keep originals. You're in effect using download and keep originals. You have all the originals on your iPad. You don't want that. You want to optimize iPad storage. What it will then do is delete. It even says if your iPad is low on space, full resolution photos and videos are automatically replaced with optimized versions. Full resolution versions are stored in iCloud. That's the only option.
Okay.
What you want to do, you can do, but it's not using iCloud Photo Library. In that case, what you'll do is you'll hook your iPad up to a computer, copy the photos off your iPad. You need to make sure you have a full copy of them. And then you can manage your storage and delete those photos. That's the old school way of doing it.
Right. Is there any kind of app or anything that I can look to see if I have duplicates of photos? Because it's telling me I have like 12,000 photos, which I find hard to believe.
It's supposed to, well, maybe, maybe not. It's supposed to not make duplicates.
Okay.
In theory, you're not supposed to have to worry about it. I'm going to give you a second path, a non-Apple path. Download Google's Photos app. Do you have a Google account, like a Gmail account or anything like
that? I do, and I also have Amazon Prime.
Oh, you're golden. Use all three. So
I'm afraid of.
Well, I would, because it's not going to duplicate anything, but it will make sure you have backups on three different clouds.
Okay.
So Google Photos is unlimited free storage of reduced quality. It's not noticeably reduced.
Okay.
So you turn that on. That'll give you a second backup. This is in case you accidentally hit the button that said delete it, and it deleted it from iCloud. Don't worry, because you still have it on Google. And Amazon Prime, same thing. Unlimited backup of your photos.
Okay.
Use all three. No reason not to. Once you do Google or Amazon, then you can use that method that you were thinking of, which is manage my storage, delete all photos.
Okay. And then they'd still be on the Amazon, and they'd still be on the Google Photos?
Right. But they wouldn't be on the iCloud anymore.
But they won't be on the iCloud. Got it. All right. I think that's it. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. This is the confusion that comes because Apple's trying to make it easy. There are those, you know, and the problem is you know too much. You understand what's going on, Sue, so you want to do what no normal person would do, delete the photos. Oh, no, because then you're deleting copies everywhere. Thank you, Apple. So in trying to make it easy, because you know what we used to say, and it's so inappropriate, is say easy for your mom. I don't want to say that. That's rude. My mom is super sophisticated computer user. I'm not going to say easy for my mom because she knows what's going on. I need to make a new metaphor for the normal computer user. We'll call him Herbie, who doesn't really understand anything. Herbie took a lot of pictures on his iPhone. It's full. Herbie was about to buy a new iPhone. So I said, and Apple said, oh, no, Herbie, Just turn on that iCloud photo storage. Now, you may have to, it may turn out that you have to buy additional photo storage from iCloud, but it is not expensive. It will only be another dollar or two a month. Herbie says, okay. Herbie's fine, because Herbie doesn't know better. Problem is, you're too smart. You did that, and then you go, well, now I want to delete those photos. And that's not what you want to do, because now, see, if Herbie did that, oh, my goodness, I deleted all my photos. So make sure you have a backup that's not on Apple. Oh, man, why do we? A non-Apple backup that's a real normal user backup, non-Herbie backup, and then you can delete all the photos. Or be a Herbie, but don't delete your photos. 1 minute, Ken, in Orange County, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Maybe I can help you fast. Ken, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
What can I do for you?
Hey, I just got a unique Q500 4K drone.
And what fun.
Yeah, I'm a retired photographer, and I thought I'd start doing aerial photography.
It's all the kids are doing it. Yep.
So I bought a SanDisk micro SD XC UHS 1 card, but when I'm recording with that, even at 1080p video, the video recordings are terrible.
The frame rate's bad.
Yeah,
and the Unique does 4K, so you need a fast card. They will tell you, I think, what the minimum micro SD is in there, can't
well,
they?
Well, in their booklet, it reads any class 10, and this card I have is a class 10, but it's terrible, so I'm just wondering, what would you or your listeners think is
get
the minimum?
Get the fast. Well, I don't know what the minimum is, but you know what? It's so cheap to get a fast SanDisk card. Get the fastest card they make, which would be 40 megabits a second, and you won't have problems. Leo Laporte, or even 95. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security and security now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.